This is the Geek Girls Guide podcast number 20, recorded July 15th, 2010. Find us online at geekgirlsguide.com.
Okay. Hi, Megan.
Hello, Nancy.
How are you?
I'm all right.
Hey, we've got another Geek of the Week on the line, and this week it's our very favorite. No, I didn't say that. We have no favorites. We have no favorite Geeks of the Week, except we do, and it's Ginny Dietrich. Hey, Ginny!
I don't even know what to say to that.
Poor Ginny. Ginny's suffering from asthma, and we keep making her laugh. And so if you hear her just, you know, hacking...
It's because I'm going to have an asthma attack from the two of you.
And you know, here's the thing. There's nothing we can do about it but sit here and listen. Like, we got to listen to you drop. Sorry.
Well, at least I'll die having fun.
That's one way of looking at it. Ginny Dietrich, welcome to the Geek
Girls.
Thank you. Yeah. Hey, my first question for you is a really simple one. Why do we think you're a geek?
You're asking me that?
Yeah. Why do you think
Aren't I supposed to be asking you why you think I'm a geek?
Hey, answer the question, Ginny.
Oh, sorry. Why
like a politician,
do you think
don't evade.
Because I wasn't popular in high school?
Well, I didn't think we were going to get into that again.
Because I love Twitter.
Do you love Twitter?
No.
Okay, let's talk about that. Ginny Dietrich is the CEO of Arment Dietrich, and when I met you, you were straight up PR. What are you now? Tell us who you are, what you do, tell us about your company, and then tell us how Twitter plays into it.
That's a lot of questions in one.
I'm just trying to get you to talk, sister.
Okay, so you want me to talk. All right. So 5.5 years ago, I started a PR, very traditional PR firm. We met because we were working on a water park client together. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't laugh about that. and we were doing very traditional PR things for them. So crisis communication, employee communication, media relations, all that fun stuff. Then the recession hit. It hit us in October of 2008. And the reason I know that date is because the bank called on October 13th and said, we can't lend you money from your line of credit any longer. And I remember that it was October 13th because it was 2 days before payroll. And the way that I had run the business to that point is that we would dip into our line for the first payroll of the month.
Oh, sorry. Get that, will you?
Forgot to turn my phone off. We would dip into our line for the first payroll of the month while we waited for clients to pay us for the services rendered the previous month. Then we'd pay back the line and be fine for the last payroll of the month. So I didn't have any cash to make the payroll on the 15th of October. So I remember those dates as clearly as possible. And I had to figure out how to make payroll. I had to figure out how I was going to keep all these people employed and live up to my end of the bargain that they had done their job so they should get paid, right? So I started trying to figure out what this whole social media thing was about. We were already blogging. It wasn't very effective. We kind of just put a blog up because clients kept asking us what blogging was, and so we figured we had to figure it out. And all of us took turns blogging, and it was terrible, and it didn't do anything. And we had maybe 5 readers a month. My mom didn't even read it. It was bad.
that's a red flag. Right? When your mom doesn't read your blog.
Yeah, she didn't even read it. She reads it now, though, so it must be better.
That's good.
And I remember, I tell this story all the time. I was at a conference in Cabo San Lucas, and tough place to have a conference. Robert Scoble spoke, and he was the keynote. And I'll never forget this because he was standing up there, and he had this big screen right behind him, and on the screen was a globe. And he's like talking about this thing called Twitter. So this was May of 07. He's talking about this thing called Twitter, and he's talking about how cool it is, and it's going to change things, and it's going to change how we communicate. He's talking to a room full of PR people. It's going to change how we communicate. It's going to change your relationships with reporters, this whole thing. And he goes to his computer, and he types a couple of things up, and he goes, okay, watch this. So he types something, and all the lights around the world, these lights keep popping up, like in India, in Africa, in Seattle, in Minneapolis, in the UK. These lights are just pop, 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 pop. And he's like, I'm talking to people around the world. And I remember leaning over to the girl sitting next to me going, this guy is the world's biggest dork. Right? So I got on this thing called Twitter as BearsFan07, and I only tweeted during the Chicago Bears football games. And at that point, it was just text messaging. So there was no desktop application. There was no Twitter.com. There was nothing. It was just text messaging. And people started texting me about what I was saying about the game. People I didn't know. And it totally freaked me out. I was like, what the heck is this? It freaked me out so bad I stopped doing it. Because it felt very stalkerish to me. It was like people that I didn't know were talking to me about the Bears games. And so I stopped doing it. But to come back to in October of 08, when I had to figure out how to make payroll, in December of 08, I changed my Twitter handle from BearsFan07 to Jenny Dietrich, really to figure out if there was a business application for it. And quite quickly, I met quite a few people. So that was December of 08. In January of 09, I went to a conference, and we had this thing called a tweet up. And I actually organized the tweet up through Twitter and met all of these people. So I met like Reva Lazansky, who was the editorial director at Entrepreneur, met her through Twitter and then met her in real life. I met Angie Schwartz. I met all these people who I now have business relationships with because I met them through Twitter, then I met them in real life. They don't live in Chicago. They live in LA. Some people live in San Diego. Some live in Atlanta. Some live in Nashville. So I have these business relationships with people now that I've cultivated on Twitter to the point that then we meet in real life and find a reason to work together. Whew, that was long.
but riveting. So, Jenny, tell us about what you do now. What does your company look like now? What does a day in the life of Jenny Dietrich look like? What does your team do for clients? What is Armin Dietrich today?
Well, there's two pieces of the business. Armin Dietrich, which is very client service focused. And one of the trends that I did not expect coming out of the recession is that we focus in B2B. So all the B2B companies have, you know, laid off their marketing team through the recession. And now they're ready to start marketing again, but they're not ready to hire full time. So we've been sort of the outsourced marketing department. We serve as chief marketing officer for probably 25 different companies right now. And I didn't see that trend coming at all. It's been fantastic because we've exceeded our budget, but I didn't see that coming at all. So Armit Dietrich is very focused on client service. Right now it's very outsourced marketing, and it's all digital marketing. It's all online, anything from blogging, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube to search engine optimization, search engine marketing, pay-per-click, that kind of stuff. So anything online, we're doing that. We're not doing any programming or design. In some cases, we hope you guys can do that for us. and then we have Spin Sucks. And Spin Sucks really was created as the blog, and now it has become its own company, for lack of a better term. And it's all online, and right now it's just the blog, and we're blogging multiple times a day. We're putting out more content. It's becoming its own living, breathing thing. We're making some money from advertising on that. And eventually, by the end of the year, that will turn into a subscription-based membership model. And part of that model will be, you know, discussion groups, brainstorming, a marketplace, how to use digital communication, how to use digital marketing, how to use advertising, all this stuff online. What we really see, because we work in the small to medium-sized B2B market, what we really see happening is that this sort of outsourced chief marketing officer piece that Armit Dietrich is doing now will go away as our clients begin to hire internally, but they're probably going to hire somebody that has, you know, 5 to 10 years of experience, and they're only going to hire one person. That person won't have a team and won't have, in some cases, the experience to be able to lead the company into the next 5 years. So Spin Sucks will be a place for them to go to brainstorm, to get ideas, to get content, all that kind of stuff, so that they can drive their company into the next 5 years.
It's pretty amazing how technology both how technology has changed your business and how quickly it has changed your business and what you do.
Super quickly. Super. So I actually drew the line in the sand in January. We'd been doing digital communication for a little more than a year, but in January I drew the line in the sand, and at that point I had talked to all of our clients. Some of them went away, some of them did not, and I said, we are no longer a traditional PR firm. And with that, it was like we flipped a switch and we just went on. It's been pretty quick.
That is fascinating. It's been fun to watch too. I mean, from, you know, our standpoint, being having a little distance between us, being familiar with you and familiar with the work that you do, it's been a really fun thing to watch.
I'd like to come to yours because I'm so in the thick of it. And I'd like to see the fun part.
No, you're fascinating. hey, so you also do keynoting and you do public speaking. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I do. I'm trying to decide if I should be honest or not. I hate keynoting. I hate public speaking.
You probably shouldn't be honest. No, that's probably
yeah, I know, right?
That's probably not a good idea.
Well, and you know this. I'm a natural introvert. So for me to get in front of 300 people and give a keynote is terrifying. It's terrifying. I've been doing it at least twice a month for the last 18 months, and it still terrifies me. But I do it because, number one, it's great for business. Number two, it really enhances our brand. And number three, it gets me out of my comfort box.
Right.
Big time.
Right. And what sorts of things do you keynote about? What are you talking to people about?
Initially, it was how to use these social media tools to enhance your credibility and your thought leadership. Now it's moving more into results and measurement and how you start to translate all of this to your revenue.
Fascinating. Now, we have a podcast that is probably going up today, possibly tomorrow, that Megan and I recorded the other day, and it's just a podcast that between Megan and I, we were having a conversation about things that we're sort of fascinated with, and I kind of want to get you to weigh in on it, which isn't entirely fair because you haven't had a chance to hear it, but basically Megan and I have the debate about, you know, whether you should follow somebody back if they follow you, and my position is that if you, you know, by not following somebody back, the implication that your content is somehow more valuable than theirs exists and could be problematic if you're looking to your community to help you position a message. I know that, you know, you're an interesting tweeter because you have some 11,000 followers. Can you talk a little bit about how that happened and how you manage that much of a community? And then could you also weigh in on that debate? Like, how do you feel about following people back? What's your criteria and what's your philosophy and how do you talk to clients about it? So if you need me to remind you about any one of those 632 questions I just asked you, please feel free to do so, because that was a Red Bull question right there. That was a...
Mark said go.
Yeah, go. So let's start with Twitter. Yeah, you have 11,000 followers. How the hell did you do that, and how do you manage that community?
I follow back everyone.
Okay.
As long as they're not spam or, X-rated or anything like that.
And why? Why do you do that?
Why do I follow them
back? Yeah, do you have a philosophy around that?
For the same reason that you just said. I mean, my philosophy on Twitter is that if you are following more people than are following you, you're perceived as a stalker. If you have more followers than you are following back, then you're either perceived as a celebrity, and you know, people are okay with that, or you're perceived as kind of stuck up and egocentric. And I like to have the numbers pretty balanced, because I like to be seen as somebody who, well, first of all, I like to be liked, so that's the number one thing. But I also want to be seen as somebody who will talk to anyone, not just people I perceive to be the influencers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, and you and I have had that conversation. Let me just out myself right now, because I totally do not follow back everyone that follows me. And so when you're talking about being stuck up and egocentric, Nancy's totally pointing at me. And I do not think I am stuck up or egocentric or a celebrity, but I think my... My position on it is, like, I don't follow back every single person that follows me, but the ones that I do follow back, I'm really listening to all those people. So I think in my mind, it's more a difference in like how you're listening and engaging with your followers or the people that you're following. So I don't follow every single person back, but it's only because of the way I manage who I'm following.
Well,
does that make sense?
I get that. Absolutely. I get that from a PR perspective, which is how I always look at things. Perception is reality, and people perceive that as you being snotty, as you being like too good to follow everybody back. I mean,
well, maybe I am. All right. Maybe I am. Maybe you too.
Here's the thing, Jenny. I love her no matter what. I mean, that's the commitment we have. Like, she's a snot and it's okay.
Differences of opinion are what make the world go round.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. No, I mean, and it's really not an issue between Megan and I. I don't really care who she follows back. But I am intrigued by the fact that you have a
lot. It's fine that you're perceived as being, like, easy. I think that's...
You know, those are words that nobody's ever said about me before, so I'm comfortable with them now.
Loose and easy, whatever.
So, Jenny, you have 11,000 followers. How do you manage a community like that, and how do you truly engage with them?
So, it's funny you asked this today, because a month ago we hired a community manager. His job is to manage the community. but I didn't anticipate that the community would grow as quickly or as much as it has in the last month, because I was focused on it about 20% of my time. So now I'm still focused on it 20% of my time, but he's focused on it 100% of his time. And I'm trying to figure out how I maintain my philosophy, not just on Twitter, but on Facebook and on the blog, you know, on the comments and all that stuff, as we grow. And it's getting really hard. It's really overwhelming. I don't know the answer. I don't have an answer right now.
And for those people who perhaps are just getting started on Twitter or getting started talking in social channels, how do you amass that large of a following? What do you think worked for you when it was just you and you were just having conversations on Twitter? What do you think allowed you to build such a significant following?
Okay, well, I'm gonna preface this with I'm completely OCD. So that being said, every Saturday until I reached 1,000 followers, I would go through and I would find, using ExecTweet, Mr. Tweet, any of those Twitter following groups, and I would go through and look at tags. So I was looking for people that owned businesses, were CEOs of businesses, were in the marketing department of businesses, anybody that would fit our demographic for business. I'd wait for them to follow me back. I think the rules have changed since then. I think you can only follow like 10 or 20 now at a time, but back then you could follow up to 100 at a time. I would wait for them to follow me back, but I would find reasons to have conversations with people. I would find reasons to reach out to them, and I very quickly amassed sort of this referral network of people. And there's about, I'd say about 25 people on Twitter now who've never met me before, who've never done business with us before, but refer business to us all the time. And those 20 people were the early people. They were the very early days of, you know, really focused in on who I was trying to reach, who we were trying to reach from a business perspective, and finding reasons to have conversations with them. Now, once I got to 1,000 people, it sort of just took on a life of its own. And it's funny because we've been talking about, do we go back to the basics? Do we do some of that again? Do we start doing Follow Fridays again? Because we do Follow Friday, but we only do it in the aspect of recommending a blog that people should read every Friday. We don't, you know, send out mass tweets of people to follow. So we've been talking about, should we go back to the basics? And I don't know the answer to that right now, because what we have is pretty hard to manage.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like your answer because it's essentially what we tell people all the time, which is that it's time and patience and hard work. Like, you amass a number of followers by working at it, by having something interesting to say, by engaging with people, by actively seeking out the types of people that you want to connect with. There is no magic to it. It's just the same as anything else. You have to decide what you want, and you have to come up with a way to get there, and then you have to just work at it and put time into it.
And I think that's what people, that's the biggest mistake that companies make, is they say, oh, well, these are free tools, so we'll get out there and we'll try it and we'll try it. And then they try it for a month and they realize, they may find that nothing's happening, so they're probably not using it correctly, or it's becoming overwhelming and they can't manage it anymore. So it does. I mean, even though the tools are free, it still takes time, and time is money in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite examples of that, we met with someone once kind of a while ago, and they wanted some feedback on their social media plan. And my favorite slide in their presentation about their plan was, we're going to put up this Facebook page and all our employees will become fans, and voila.
Wow.
Like, literally they wrote the word voila on the slide. Like, there was like this magic was going to happen when the employees became a fan of the page, because every single person in their network would apparently just flock to this Facebook page. It was a beautiful thing. So that's my new favorite social media plan. Voila.
Voila.
I'm going to name my next kid voila.
Voila.
Voila. And then everybody will love me because I've got voila. Hey, Jitty, who influences you? Who are the people that you look to see where things are going, or who do you enjoy tuning into on a regular basis?
There's a lot of people. From a PR perspective, Danny Brown in Canada, Mark Schaefer in Knoxville. From a really good writing perspective, there's a woman that writes, what's the blog called? Shoot.
Girls
Writing Roads.
Oh.
She's a fantastic writer, and she doesn't write about anything that has anything to do with business or anything, but she just, the way that she can take ordinary things and make them extraordinary through writing is phenomenal.
What was the name of that blog? I'm sorry.
Writing Roads.
Writing Roads, okay.
I saw Elizabeth Edwards interviewed on the Today Show about a month ago, and the way that she handled the hard questions from Matt Lauer about her marriage and about the scandal and all those things, I was just really impressed with what she said and how she handled herself and her, what I perceived to be, very authentic self. So I've been kind of paying attention to what she's doing as she moves through this not easy time of her life, just because I'd like to be perceived like her, very humble, very authentic, very honest. One of the things that she said during the interview was, he said, what do you have to say to the campaign staff that has come out and berated you and said you were awful? And she said, look, I like to be liked. It really hurts my feelings to know that they didn't like me, that while John was running for president, that they had president, vice president,
president. Yeah.
Okay. Second guess myself there for a sec. That they didn't like having me around. And she said, but for a learning growth opportunity for me, that's really good to know. She said, I thought that I was on a level playing field with them, and I had as much say as John did in what happened in the race and what happened when we were on the road. And she said, they didn't see that at all. They saw me at a different playing level than them. And I didn't know that. She said, that's great feedback. You know, just so things like that, I look for things like that that really inspire me to be a better person, to always maintain humility, to never make sure that I don't get too big for my britches, that kind of stuff.
That's great. What did you want to be when you grew up? Like, when you were a kid, where did you see yourself as an adult?
You know, as a kid, I don't really remember. I mean, I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah. I grew up in a Mormon family. Women don't
work.
Wait,
what?
What?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
All right.
So,
we'll come back to that.
You know, the idea that you would actually leave the home and have a career never even crossed my mind. I remember that I wanted to go to Harvard. That was like the one thing I wanted to do. I was accepted, but I did not go.
Really?
I actually regret that. That's one life's decision that I really regret. But it wasn't until I went through college, I really wanted to be a sports agent. And my mom said, you have to get a law degree and you're not going to be a good attorney. Now, from the very basic understanding of law and an attorney, she's right. I would have been a terrible attorney. But I wanted to be a sports agent. So I guess PR publicity is as close as I got.
Wow. I'm still stuck on the, you were a Mormon in Salt Lake City. So how is your family about your career now, and how were they when, you know, how do they feel about who you are today?
It took a long time to get here, but they're very cool with it now.
Oh, that's cool.
It took a long time to get here.
And how wired are they? How connected are they? Aware of the kind of activity that, you know, you participate in every day, the sorts of conversations you facilitate every day in the digital space? Do they know?
No. My dad's always like, I don't get this whole blogging thing. I don't get it. My mom, who does read the blog, she'll email me and say, oh, that Eric Hansen said the nicest thing about you on your blog.
Hey, since you're never going to come and visit us, are you going to come and visit Eric Hansen? You seem to like him a lot.
I do like him.
Right. So are you going to come and visit him?
No.
Thanks.
I would. If I come to Minneapolis, it will only be to visit you.
Okay. That's what we like to hear. That's what we like to hear. are going to wrap this up, but I guess I'm looking for some parting words from you. Something, you know, is there advice, or are there words of wisdom, or are there lessons that you want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, I think from a social media perspective, there's sort of this pack mentality. Oh, everybody's on Facebook and Twitter. We've got to get there. And the fact of the matter is, you don't have to get there. It may not make sense for you. It may not make sense for you from a business perspective or a personal perspective. So if you want to try one of these tools and you aren't trying it, figure out which one makes most sense. You know, Twitter is not for everybody. Facebook isn't for everybody. Maybe YouTube's the right place for you to be. Maybe it's LinkedIn. Maybe you prefer to do still images and you can use Flickr. I mean, there's so many different tools that you can use. And just choose one and start with that. You don't have to go out there and try them all at once.
Thank you. Thank
You're
you,
welcome.
Jenny Dietrich.
Yeah, thanks for talking to us. This was really fun. It was great to, I mean, we've known you for a long time, but we learned some new things about you. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah.
So, Megan, one thing that I will leave you with is I am copying the summer of dresses. And I've been wearing a dress every day. And I got dressed this morning, and I actually put on a skirt and blouse because I had a meeting. And my husband turns and he looks at me and he goes, I like this summer of dresses thing.
That's awesome. You need to submit a photo.
Submit some
I don't think the site has any photos from Chicago yet. And it's for everybody everywhere. So take photos and submit them to the site. We love getting photos from everywhere.
Have your old man take a picture of you daily. That'll be an opportunity for you to have some intimacy. Compliments of summer of dresses. I'm going to get on there before this summer is over, I'm telling you. I'm going to find myself some nasty ass old polyester thing, and I'm going to get on that summer of dresses.
Oh, your public can't wait.
I know.
I know they can't wait for this.
Hey, thanks, Jenny Dietrich. We love you.
Thanks for having me, you guys. I love you.